From the Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugar Land, Texas, where life truly is sweeter, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Wednesday, January 17th, 2024. I am the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Hey there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get things started officially with
the Daily Denogram.
Yep, words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. It says here, the first 90% of a project takes 90% of the time. The last 10% takes the other 90% of the time. Yeah, especially projects employing a lot of math.
Help me! Help me!
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of the blogcast. Here we go.
Twisted history.
All point.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
You be sure.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same, you need to know your twisted history.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
See, there you go. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1920. Alcohol prohibition began here in the good old USA as the Volstead Act went into effect. You know, a lot of FDR's success in the 1932 election can be attributed to prohibition. And it was on this day in 1950, the Great Brinks robbery, where 11 thieves stole more than $2 million from an armored car company's offices in Boston. And as spectacular as that robbery was, it still doesn't hold a candle to our government.
God help us!
Now that we're into the new year, the what-ifing has begun. I don't know if you've noticed it, but I sure have, because first thing I do every morning when I open up the studio is I look through all the news, see what's happening, and I notice the what-ifing has started. In other words, what if Donald Trump wins re-election? And not all of the what-ifing is negative. But most of it is. I mean, right off the bat, a local radio station here in Houston, the big news talk station, KTRH, was running a story by B.D. Hobbs. A short one, but an interesting one. In which he wrote, without any winning issues to run on, Joe Biden and the Democrats are going back to gaslighting as they gear up for November's election. Joe Biden's recent War on Democracy speech wasn't just another attack on conservatives. It was a preview of what is still to come. Everything that they've geared up, the whole point of their rhetoric, is to legitimize the very same thing that they claim Trump did. And that's according to Jonathan Tobin, who's a political writer with JNS.org. Basically, what the Dems are doing is setting the stage for what will be a true Democrat insurrection. So, yes, so what they allege we did in 2021, they're going to do. And Tobin was speaking with B.D. Hobbs over at KTRH. Hobbs works in the newsroom. He said there's going to be riots that'll probably make the Black Lives Matter summer look like a picnic. Now, I warned you about this, what, a year ago already, right? And Tobin says, Democrats seem to think that Trump winning is the end of the world. They've convinced themselves that he's Hitler, that he's going to destroy American democracy. And he said, the bottom line is, don't expect the Democrats to concede defeat if they lose. Well, I think we all pretty much know that, don't we? But it's not just a domestic issue. Because over the pond, we have a former MI6 chief who's raising alarm over Trump's potential re-election and UK national security. There was a recent television interview where Sir Richard Dearlove, the former head of Britain's secret intelligence service known as MI6, voiced concerns over the potential re-election of Donald Trump, suggesting it could pose a significant threat to the UK's national security. Imagine that. Now, the statement has sparked a wave of discussions among political analysts and intelligence experts about the implications of that kind of a claim. And, you know, let's not beat about the bush here. The Brits were not crazy about Donald Trump. I don't think the Brits are ever too comfortable when you have a very strong American president. They just don't like that. And although Maggie Thatcher loved Ronald Reagan, the Brits didn't. Can you imagine their attitude toward Donald Trump. So this guy, Sir Richard, Richard Dearlove, who led MI6 from 1999 to 2004, which in a political landscape, that's ancient history. And why they ask this guy anything, I don't know. He's an old coot. But he was asked about the primary threats facing the UK in the upcoming year, and he pointed to the ongoing conflict in Ukraine and China's global ambitions. And he's not wrong there. The man's spot on. And he was speaking particularly in respect to Taiwan as their key concerns. But he added a political dimension to the list of threats by expressing worry over the possibility of Trump returning to the White House. And he did elaborate on his concerns. He said that Trump's approach to international relations, especially his past criticisms of NATO, could undermine the long-standing transatlantic alliance that's been a cornerstone of European security. I watched the interview. What he didn't say was exactly what Trump's issue with NATO was. Allow me to recap. His issue was that member nations were not paying their fair share into NATO to support it. If you're going to be a member of NATO, you have to cough up the money, cough up the cash. So the American commitment to NATO, often referred to as the American nuclear umbrella, is considered essential for Europe's defense. And well, it should be. And any shift in this stance could have profound implications for the UK and its allies. Well, if the UK is really that concerned, UK should get together with their allies and make sure that everybody pays up their fair share. Now, Trump's previous tenure as president saw him frequently questioning the value of NATO, accusing member countries of taking advantage of the United States, both in terms of trade and military protection, which they did big time. His noncommittal stance on whether the U.S. would remain a steadfast member of NATO raised eyebrows across the globe, with some European officials recalling Trump's stark warning that the U.S. might not come to Europe's aid if attacked. Yes, that was a scare tactic, but it was a good one. It was effective. And these statements haven't gone unnoticed, and the prospect of Trump's return to power is causing unease among those who value the stability that the NATO alliance brings to international affairs. I mean, that's what's really holding Vlad Putin at bay at the moment. The suggestion that Trump's re-election could be a security threat is indicative of the broader concerns about his foreign policy unpredictability. Now, critics of Trump's foreign policy argue that his transactional view of alliances and partnerships might lead to a weakening of the collective defense structures that have deterred aggression and maintained peace in the post-World War II era. They fear that a second Trump administration might further strain the bonds between the U.S. and its European allies, potentially leaving the U.K. in a precarious position. And if they really are that concerned about that, maybe the U.K. should spearhead an effort to unite the European NATO members. It's always easy for them over there to point their fingers at us, the Americans, and say, well, you know, they might not back us up if there's a conflict over here, and they might not do this. Well, true. But if you're really concerned about the NATO alliance, shore it up on your end, for God's sakes. Don't expect us to foot the entire bill. You'd have to be living under a rock in Europe not to know that the American people are suffering right now. We are suffering under an economy that has become nothing but a yoke around our necks. And supporters of Trump, on the other hand, might see Sir Richard's comments as part of a broader resistance to change within the established intelligence community. There's certainly an element of that, because they often accuse intelligence agencies of harboring biases against outsiders and non-traditional leaders like Trump, who challenge the status quo. Let's not forget the fact that intelligence agencies, like our own CIA, and we'll throw in the FBI with that, the NSA, DHS, in a matter of speaking, they're all part of this deep state. They are the deep state. Should MI6 be any different? Should they be considered any different? Probably not. And as the political landscape evolves and the possibility of Trump's re-election becomes a topic of robust debate, the international community is going to be closely monitoring the situation. You can bet on that. The implications for global security arrangements, particularly those involving the UK and its relationship with the US, are significant and warrant careful consideration by policymakers and strategists alike. And I think anybody entertaining the thoughts of throwing their hat into the ring, into the realm of politics, be it as a senator, a congressman or woman, or future president, you need to be paying attention to the world's issues right now. Security issues and insecurity issues. I rarely get involved in religious issues. I mean, you know, you want to lose friends? Talk politics or religion. And I'm talking politics all the time in these blogcasts. So now here we go with the other one. But in an unprecedented move that is sending shockwaves throughout the Catholic community, surely, but probably a great deal of the Christian community, Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano has issued a call for the Swiss Guards to take some pretty bold action against Pope Francis and Cardinal Victor Manuel Tucho Fernandez. Now, this appeal comes in the wake of revelations regarding a sexually explicit theological work authored by Fernandez, which has been deemed pornographic and contrary to the faith. Now, Archbishop Vigano's outcry is not merely a reaction to the content of the book. Please understand that. It is more a culmination of what he perceives as a series of transgressions within the church. And he's accused the current papacy of systematically dismantling the foundational principles of the Catholic faith. And he sees the arrest of these figures as a necessary step to defend the See of Peter. That's S-E-E, the See of Peter, and uphold the sanctity of the church. Now, when things go this far in a body like the Catholic Church, well, things must be getting pretty serious. Now, I'm not Catholic. I was raised Lutheran, which is Catholic light. That's like Catholic without purgatory or bingo. Now, the controversial book in question, titled The Mystical Passion, Spirituality and Sensuality, was written by Cardinal Fernandez in 1998, and it draws parallels between mystical experiences and sexual responses. I haven't read the book, so I can't speak intelligently on that. The publication's been criticized for its explicit nature and for drawing scandalous comparisons that a lot of people believe have no place in theological discourse. People like that are generally just waved off as old fuddy-duddies, right? Old school. Well, I'll let you be the judge on that. But Vigano's declaration is a scathing indictment of the church's current path, current trajectory, over the past century. And he traces a pattern of infiltration and subversion within the church, likening it to the tactics used by secular governments. And the Archbishop argues that a series of compromises and tolerances have led to the current state of affairs, where the Vatican is described as being reduced to a brothel. Now, I'm going to play you some audio from Archbishop Vigano. Listen very carefully. He does have a thick accent, but his English is just fine. Trust me.
A few weeks ago, an important collaborator of Hillary Clinton in John Podesta was arrested for pedophilia and child pornography. I'm referring to Slade Sommer, a man with ties to the world of Broadway and cinema, who played a role in the effort to debunk the infamous Pizzagate affair. That is, the network, filthy complicity and horrendous crimes against minors that revolves around the international deep state. We have learned that certainly Jeffrey Epstein and most likely Ghislaine Maxwell were members of the Israeli Mossad. This makes us understand that the famous trips of many well-known people to Epstein Island were used to blackmail them by collecting evidence of their guilt in participating in heinous ritual crimes against minors. And if the heads of state and governance officials of the Western world do not dare to breathe out a word of protest against the massacres of civilians in Gaza Strip, it is legitimate to assume that this attitude is due to the intensive dossier with videos inculpating them that are in possession of the Israeli intelligence services. The same thing must be happening with the preparation of the fake pandemic emergency, which was lavishly replicated in all the member states of the World Economic Forum and the United Nations, and also with the farce of the Ukrainian crisis. But this blackmail of the powerful of the world constituted the unifying element of the globalist subversive project.
Now, you notice at the very beginning, he was talking about a collaborator of John Podesta and Hillary Clinton. And basically what he is describing here is a deep state, but not just an American deep state, a global deep state. And he's been a vocal critic of what he calls the deep church and its alignment with globalist agendas. And he's had previously spoken about out against the worship of Pachamama, which is the Abu Dhabi Declaration and other events that he believes, or I say is in concert with the Abu Dhabi Declaration and other events that he believes represent a departure from traditional Catholic values and teachings. Now, there's been a lot of criticism lobbed toward Pope Francis. And most of that criticism has to do with his seeming endorsement of a globalist agenda. So in his call to action, Vigano not only addresses the Swiss Guards, but also the broader Catholic community, and he urges collective resistance against the forces that seek to undermine the Church, advocating for a return to the core tenets of the faith and a rejection of modernist interpretations that dilute its message. Now, the response to Vigano's call has been mixed, with some praising his courage and standing up for the faith, while others, of course, caution against the divisiveness that actions like this may cause. Now, the situation has highlighted the deep rifts within the Church and the challenges it faces in reconciling tradition with contemporary issues. So as the story unfolds, and it will, the world watches to see how the Vatican's going to respond to this bold challenge to its authority. The implications of this confrontation are, wow, pretty deep. I mean, the potential is there to set the stage for a significant shift in the power dynamics within the Catholic Church. And all we can do is stand by and watch. But I recommend that you do. I mean, I realize that we have an attitude of separation of church and state. But when your church is, and not just the church, let's just say religious bodies in general around the world, are usually the anchors for the governments that are in charge wherever these churches are located. I mean, look at the Muslim faith, how it rules the Middle East. The Christian faith ruling pretty much Europe. And we have noticed in recent decades how the church seems to be losing its grip in the Western world. Fewer and fewer people are members of the church. And Christianity in general seems to be in some form of decline. And the only time you ever hear about Christianity these days is when it comes to Christian fanatics. You know, Hollywood loves to lampoon them for sure. Anytime you see religion depicted in movies. It's usually negatively, at least in recent years. And independent filmmakers, though, that's not the case. I'm speaking mostly of the Hollywood community. In other words, the leftists in our entertainment business. But this whole thing where Archbishop Vigano is tying in Hillary Clinton, John Podesta, their friends, their cronies, and makes that connection with Jeffrey Epstein, you know, and then drops the bomb that Mossad over there in Israel has been keeping an eye on this, sure makes you scratch your head and wonder what in the world is going on. In a recent statement that has understandably stirred up considerable controversy, Senator Rand Paul, one of my heroes, has made his stance clear regarding Dr. Anthony Fauci's role in the COVID-19 pandemic. The Kentucky senator has expressed that, in his view, the former White House chief medical advisor should be held accountable for his actions to the fullest extent. Now, what would fullest extent bring to mind? Yeah, potential imprisonment. I can't agree more. Senator Paul has had numerous confrontational exchanges. You've seen them on TV with Dr. Fauci during congressional testimonies. Has previously submitted a criminal referral for perjury to the Justice Department. And this was something that I wondered if it would ever really happen. Because as I watched a lot of the C-SPAN coverage of Rand Paul and Dr. Fauci butting heads and Fauci protesting too much, you know, Senator, you don't know what you're talking about. Unfortunately, the senator did know what he was talking about because the senator is also a doctor. Little glitch there. So I wondered as I was watching this testimony whether or not Fauci would ever have to pay for his misdeeds, basically lying. Oh, and he's a good liar. So this referral now on the part of Dr. Rand Paul, Dr. Senator Rand Paul, is based on Fauci's comments about the funding of gain-of-function research. They had a big tussle over that one. And, of course, the gain-of-function research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, which Paul alleges were misleading. And they were. I mean, Fauci claiming we were not funding gain-of-function research there at Wuhan when, in fact, we were. I find that a little troublesome, don't you? So the senator's accusations are not just limited to the realm of research funding. In an interview, he claimed to have evidence that contradicts Dr. Fauci's public statements regarding the actual origins of the virus. You remember that? According to Paul, emails from Dr. Fauci reveal a private acknowledgement of concerns over the virus being manipulated and the gain-of-function research, despite public denials of those theories. And he was very adamant about those denials. So Paul's criticism extends beyond the scientific community and goes well into the public health decisions made during the pandemic. And he's described these decisions as some of the worst in history and believes that they've contributed to millions of deaths worldwide. Even people like you and I could see that. So the senator has authored a book titled Deception, The Great COVID Cover-Up, in which he argues that Dr. Fauci betrayed his country through his handling of the pandemic. Here's Dr. Rand Paul. I like to call him Dr. Rand Paul. He's a senator, of course. But here's Dr. Rand Paul speaking with Laura Ingraham on the Fox News Channel.
The one thing that's consistent about Anthony Fauci is what he says in private is largely true. What he says in public is largely a lie. When asked about the masks by a fellow co-worker, Sylvia Burwell, he told her the truth. He said the masks don't work because the pores are bigger than the virus.
Their own study revealed that about the influenza virus.
But then in public, he wears three masks. In private, he tells his colleagues you don't really need to wear one. It's the same with immunity. It's the same with the vaccines. And it's really the same with gain of function. In private, he said, yes, we're suspicious that the virus was manipulated, looks manipulated, and we know they're doing gain of function in Wuhan. He describes it. That's in a private email. In public, to this day, he still denies that they funded any gain-of-function research in Wuhan.
Now, naturally, Dr. Fauci has dismissed these calls for his prosecution as baseless and irresponsible. How dare you go against Dr. Fauci? I mean, you go against Dr. Fauci, you're going against science, right? During a CNN appearance, he questioned the rationale behind these accusations, labeling them as nonsensical and indicative of a lack of understanding of the situation. But then again, what would you expect from a guy like Fauci? And despite his rebuttals, Senator Paul remains pretty resolute in his belief that Fauci's actions warrant severe consequences. He's accused Fauci of dishonesty and evasion of responsibility, suggesting that these actions should lead to prison time, especially considering the gravity of the pandemic and its impact on global health. Let us not forget the numbers of people who died during this thing. So the senator's call for accountability is just part of a broader narrative among some conservative circles where there's a demand for transparency and justice regarding this entire nightmare known as the COVID-19 crisis. And critics argue that the decisions made by health officials have had far-reaching and devastating effects. Talk to any of the families who lost someone. And those responsible shouldn't be allowed to evade scrutiny. That's the important thing. So as the debate continues, and it will, for God knows only how long, it's clear that the fallout from the COVID-19 plandemic is far from over with. I mean, you got strong opinions on both sides. The discussion around Dr. Fauci's legacy and the U.S. response to the plandemic is likely to persist as a point of contention in the public sphere. But I still maintain that this bug was intentionally made by the Chinese government in the Wuhan lab. Germ warfare for the purpose of, let's call it, retaliation against the United States and Donald Trump for the trade deal that he worked out with China. China didn't like it. They were going to make us pay. Let's head on over to the comedy corner and get some giggles from Karen Morgan.
So we have a lot of different generations here tonight, which makes me very happy because the generations right now, if you look on social media or in the news, generations are fighting amongst themselves for some reason. So it's confusing sometimes to know which generation you're in and who you're supposed to be mad at for whatever reason. So I'm here to help y'all tonight. Our oldest generation right now is called the Silent Generation. These people were born between the 1920s and 1940s. They're called the Silent Generation because when they were children, they were to be seen and not heard. These are people like my in-laws who are in their 90s. And these are the people that still cook with lard and are concerned about safety around a microwave oven. I love my in-laws. They've been married for 63 years. And apparently, if you've been married that long, you no longer have the ability to hear the sound of the other person's voice. I'm not even kidding. They have two separate conversations with me when I go to their house. Two completely separate conversations. And I go back and forth because I don't want to be rude. They're lovely people. But it's like having a conversation with somebody with a lazy eye. You don't know which is the right one. You don't know. The next generation down are the baby boomers. The baby boomers were born between the 1940s and mid-60s. Baby boomers! Y'all are awesome. The baby boomers perfected smoking! Yay, smoking! These are my mom's people. My mom is an older boomer, but they love to smoke. They smoked at home. They smoked at church. They smoked in restaurants between bites of food. And they smoked in the car with their children in the back seat with the windows rolled up tightly. Now, for whatever reason, the boomers hate millennials. They hate millennials. And to be fair, everyone hates millennials. I think it's because they invented avocado toast. Or the word artisanal. And it's not fair. Millennials, it's not fair. It's not your fault that you suck. It's not your fault. It's not your fault. Your Star Wars has Jar Jar Binks in it, and there's no coming back from that. I'm sorry. Now, below the millennials are Gen Z. These are my kids. Good luck, America.
That'll do it. Make it a wonderful Wednesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.